Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. The newest member of the Tennessee Titans on offense was introduced yesterday at St. Thomas Sports Park. Robert Woods, the trade made official the other day. Robert Woods coming from L.A. to the Tennessee Titans, and he had his introductory press conference with the Titans yesterday and talked about why the Titans were a good fit for him coming over from L.A. Here's what Robert Woods had to say yesterday at his press conference.
What was the guys that you talked to, and what was it about this place that made you want to come here?
Josh Reynolds was one of them. Antoine Woods, one of them. And really just having a relationship already with Todd Downing and Rob Moore, being with them in Buffalo. Derrick Henry, obviously, Tannehill, A.J. Brown, obviously a top-performing team, Coach of the Year. Being able to join this team and this organization, I think, was beneficial for my career, knowing how the league works and how you want to win games. You want to be able to be a balanced team, and I think this organization, this team, being able to feed off of the ground game, having a quarterback who delivered the ball, having another threat on the opposite side, and obviously being able to bring my game and compliments to this team, I think was the best fit for my game.
So that was Robert Woods yesterday at his press conference. A couple things standing out to me there, Joe. Number one, I watched the whole thing. I thought Robert Woods was very impressive. So really cool to see him yesterday. I think he's going to be really good here for this locker room for the Titans. Number two, I found it very kind of interesting and funny that the first guy he brought up was Josh Reynolds that he talked to about the Titans. I found that to be very funny. I don't know why, but I did.
Josh Reynolds. No bitterness toward the Titans. How about that?
I guess not.
It's actually, I mean, not that I would expect Josh Reynolds to be like, don't go there. Terrible. You know, Josh, I mean, there are a lot of things, a lot of different factors were involved in Josh Reynolds not making an impact here, but kind of impressive. Yep. Actually, it kind of speaks well of the Titans, right? That that Reynolds actually told him, like, yeah, it's a good place, or whatever exactly he told him.
We all know that Reynolds eventually just wanted to restore the roar. The allure was too great up there, and it's worked out well for him.
Exactly. I mean, Reynolds is in a very good place. He's got to be very happy being with the rising franchise of the NFL. He's got rings in his future, so he's already in a good mood, and so he's not gonna have any hard feelings toward his last stop. Makes sense.
So Robert, right? Yeah. Certainly does. So Robert Woods, he wouldn't quite nail down a timetable yesterday in terms of his rehab and his recovery from his ACL. But, you know, if you're reading in between the lines and listening to some of the things he said, I think it's fair to say that his goal is to be back and to be ready for opening day for the Titans coming up this year. So we'll see whether or not, number one, that's able to happen. Let's say he does get back and he's healthy and he's ready to go in week one. What does Robert Woods, what do the ways that you can use him both in the running game and the passing game, what does his skill set bring to this Titans offense? And as you watch Robert Woods play, what are some of the things that you think he does really, really well that adds to this Titans offense?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, the timetable thing, I could see some people looking at that and saying, oh, what does that mean? But I took that as he just doesn't do it, which is probably smart. Not going to put some timetable on it, but everything else he said about the rehab and everything is that it's going very well. And if that's the case, then I would expect him to be out there for week one. So, you know, then you still don't know from there mentally how it might affect someone. if it takes some time to kind of get all the way back, I mean, you have to allow for some of that. You look at Taylor Lewan early in the season last year. I mean, I have to think, and he talked about it. You know, some of it is just mentally getting yourself used to like playing normally and not compensating for the injury, all that stuff. I mean, it's still a significant injury, but no, he's going to be. I mean, he's just a good all-around player, just a really solid all-around receiver. I think he, as a number two receiver, I think he's a good one in the NFL, and that's what you need. You need someone who can be out there every week and who can take some pressure off A.J. Brown and can take advantage of a little bit better matchups. And, yeah, you need someone who can block for the running game, and this guy can do it. So, by the way, I told you about the beat writer mock draft, right? So,
oh yeah.
So I want to tease. I can't tell, you know, I can't tell my pick yet, but I just want to tease a blocking receiver also coming. So if I were the GM, I'm bringing in. I got Brown. I got Woods. I got another blocking receiver. Derrick Henry's running for about 2,300 yards next year.
Well, not even factoring in Nick Westbrook-Cakina that's going to get in there and block too.
Who's a great blocker.
I know.
I mean,
so just imagine how much damage can be done.
Again, just go four wide, but run the ball out of it. Who's going to stop you?
No one. That's the answer. We've talked about this a lot last year with Julio Jones, and I mean, it just never really came to fruition. He was hurt basically the whole year. Look, AJ was hurt a lot of last year as well. Number one, I'm interested to see if AJ can stay healthy the whole year this year. But if AJ and Robert Woods are both healthy, what could having a number two threat like a Robert Woods, who, look, I think if he's healthy at this point of his career, I think he's an upgrade on Julio Jones. What could that do for A.J. Brown and the way that teams maybe either defend this Titans offense or defend him specifically? Could we see a little bit more one-on-one with A.J. Brown? What do we think Robert Woods brings to the table that maybe enhances A.J.'s game at this point in his career?
Well, I don't know that it's going to – I don't know that, like, Robert Woods is going to you know, change how people defend – you know, shade things his way and away from A.J. Brown. I don't think that's going to happen. But I think he's gonna capitalize on it, and I think that if this offense looks the way they clearly intend for it to look, then it would look something more like 2020, when you had a tight end who was a real problem for people. You know, yeah, Austin Hooper now in the Jonnu Smith role, and then you have a number two receiver who is good and solid and makes big plays himself, a la Corey Davis that year. You know the huge difference being, the hopeful difference for the Titans being that he's on the field every week. I mean, I think that, again, Julio Jones could have probably done similar things and at times did, but not nearly enough because he wasn't available. So I think this offense in intent will look like 2020. And if that's the case, and also then the question is, what do they look like up front? Are they going to perform there? Are they going to be more like 2020 offensive line performance as opposed to 2021? And that's a big question still. But if that is the case, then that's the idea. You got a better offense. You got an offense that has gotten back to being really dangerous and balanced to go with what we think will be a really good defense.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Liam on the text line says, "Love Bobby Trees. That was an impressive introduction. But the coolest thing was the intensity in his face when he was describing how the smile drops when he steps on the field." Liam, loving the intensity that Bobby Trees brings to the table yesterday in the press conference. Just imagine what it'll be like when he steps on the field.
Yeah, see, I didn't realize that Bobby Trees was like the alter ego. He was like the intense, you know, football nice guy off the field, and then, you know, you go Clark Kent in the phone booth, and Bobby Trees comes out. So
I really have no interest in the back of his jersey saying Woods. I think we're past that at this point. Just needs to say Trees.
I wonder if he'd be allowed to do that. If it were the XFL, he would definitely be allowed to do that.
I mean, you had Chad Ochocinco running around in a jersey. Surely you can put Trees on the back of it.
That's a good point. Meta world peace. Yeah. Why not?
I mean, of the Titans' nicknames, I mean, I know people love Tractorcito with Derrick Henry. I mean, the Bobby Trees is up there on the all-time list. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it is very cool. And yeah, and apparently Bobby Trees is, you know, that's the Mr. Hyde to Dr. Jekyll. So yeah. Especially probably when he's blocking a defensive back.
Oh, yeah.
Watch out.
Full Bobby backs. Trees. No question about it. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We've talked about A.J. Brown. Lots of money flying around right now in the NFL for wide receivers. What does it mean for A.J.? We'll get into that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
So I'll ask you, do you know, remember who's the first person to call you Bobby Trees, and how did that nickname stick?
Yeah, it started out in Buffalo. I don't know who was the first one. Seen it on Twitter a couple of times when I was in Buffalo early on. And then really once I got to L.A., it blew up. The fans loved it, ran with it. The Rams ran with it. And really just that alter ego Cooper Kupp and my receiver coach there, Yarbs, used to call me Bobby Trees and the most complete because – you get out there on the field, as soon as that national anthem is finished, Bobby Trees come out, turns to a whole different person. The smile comes off, and really just become that aggressor, setting the tone, being physical, being stout, making guys intimidated to tackle me and just to come up and press. All these things, it's just a tone setter. It's a mindset.
That was Robert Woods, a.k.a. Bobby Trees, yesterday at his introductory press conference for the Titans, discussing his alter ego. I'm all for it. Love me some alter egos here on the Titans. All for it.
Wish I could have made that presser just to hear Luke ask, can you please explain the nickname Bobby Trees? Miss you, Luke. Let's talk about Luke, the young guy who actually should also be on like the old fishing show with all of us, you know? Luke transcends generations.
I mean, if we're being honest, I should probably be there too, but yeah.
Yeah, probably. You're kind of a tweener. You're kind of a generational tweener in this whole situation. I mean, the young and hip people, Michelle and all that, they didn't invite you, huh? They didn't invite That's you true. Or me to their little party.
I'm too in old. My defense, yeah. Elijah is handling all the invites, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. I guess that's typical. I'll look at the mailbox, just wait for it to come.
It just must have gotten lost, you know, the whole mail thing.
Yeah, it'll be sent in the mail, because that's how we still communicate, by sending letters and stuff, yes.
I actually have a carrier pigeon in my house right now that I'm going to write and send one to Joe later in the show. Good stuff.
Yeah, telegraph me, a little Morse code.
Yes, I will. Joe, money's being thrown around left and right for wide receivers in the NFL right now. Davante Adams signs his big deal with the Raiders last week, which still pains me to say. Tyreek Hill is traded from the Chiefs to the Dolphins yesterday, signs his big extension as well. You know, we already talked about the A.J. Brown tweet when Christian Kirk signed his deal with the Jags this offseason. So with the Titans being in a position where you're going to have to start to work on A.J. Brown's contract relatively soon, what does this all mean for A.J. Brown? If you're John Robinson, would you like to get a deal done sooner rather than later? What do you think all this means for A.J. Brown in terms of what he's going to be looking at making over the course of his next contract?
It's a good question. I really don't know. Like, where does he fit into this market, you know? I mean, he's not going to be a market setter, you know? But he's going to. I mean, look at these numbers. I mean, look at the numbers for these guys. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins had set the market. Now, where is Hopkins on the list? Is he still third?
I think he's third.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, AJ Brown at this point in his career. Again, you think about these things in terms of both sides of the table, because look, when it comes down to it, you're on the management side of the table. You're coming up with all these different reasons that the money should be down a little bit. And, of course, AJ's side, all the different reasons he should be right near the top of the list. Certainly, I would say he has had injuries. I mean, there have been times, even like last year when he was really struggling and he was really struggling with injuries, it was like, gosh, maybe this is going to be a difficult decision. I mean, it was a brief thought for me because – then he comes back, and then you see, you know, think about like the San Francisco game. It's like, I mean, he dominated a football game, yep. You know, a huge game, prime time against a really good team, that team that was really good enough to go really deep in the playoffs. And, That's the kind of impact AJ Brown can have. But that's the concern slash that's the counter argument to AJ Brown having top of the market money is the injury question. I mean, he's had surgeries and things like that. I suspect he's going to be in the 20s for sure, right? How far into it? You know, I don't know. Does it make sense? You know, earlier than later. Yeah, I mean, what if he comes out next year and is absolutely just tearing up the league? You know, because the price can rise on you then.
It can. I'm interested how his age factors into this too. I mean, he's 24. Tyreek Hill is 28 when he just signed this big deal. Devontae Adams is 29. He'll be 30 signing this big deal. You got the cap going up. Like, quite honestly, like, it's a pretty good time for AJ Brown to be entering into this situation with the receiver market being what it is and the cap about to go up as well. Like, I don't know if you could have maybe handpicked a better time to be in this spot if you're AJ Brown. I'm interested. I mean, obviously, he has not had a season like Devontae Adams has had yet. He has not had a season really like Tyreek Hill has had yet either. So I'm not saying he should be paid as much as those guys, but he is also younger than those guys. And I'm interested to see maybe how that factors into the negotiation as well.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at all the top paid guys. I mean, they're all right around late 20s, early 30s. You know, Hopkins is 30 now. Devontae's 30. I mean, Keenan Allen has a huge deal at 30. Mike Williams is 28. And then so go through those names, you know. Where does AJ Brown fit into that group? I mean, we've talked about Amari Cooper. I mean, he's got a massive deal and maybe a little bit big relative to his performance. I mean, Michael Thomas is sitting there at 29 a couple years ago. You know, I would have said, like, that's like he's arguably the best receiver in the game right now. What is he moving forward? But you're right. You have to go down the list to get into anyone who's even in their, you know, mid-20s making this kind of money. And I think you're right that the timing is fantastic with the cap the way it's going, because it is going to go up and you are going to be able to reward and pay your guys coming up for deals right now and feel and you should be okay with it and still have some flexibility. And of course with John Robinson, you got two guys right now that you absolutely have to lock up. I mean, I don't think there's, you know, obviously you pick up the option with Simmons, but which will happen, but both of those guys you have to plan for giving them huge money to be a part of your team moving forward, unless you're looking at a total rebuild here moving forward and all of a sudden you're you know, thinking about getting picks and totally starting over and starting the QB thing over and all that. But the Titans aren't even close to that right now.
I got a texture that says AJ Brown is our best recruiter. That in itself deserves a nice contract, even though the players he recruits have trash knees and hamstring. This coming from an unnamed texter on the text line. So I guess that's just in direct correlation to Julio Jones, even though that was a trade.
Yeah, but he was recruiting.
He was recruiting.
He was recruiting. He was recruiting him in hopes that the Titans would trade for him, and it was pretty good. I agree. I actually, in all seriousness, think that should be a little bit of a bump on his contract. The creativity on social media. I know AJ Brown on social media. You know, you take the good, you take the bad, but that was good.
Yes, you do. It was good. I mean, look, if he could start recruiting, if only he could have recruited the Pharaoh to come here, and you wouldn't be having this discussion. They'd be a two-time Super Bowl champion, and it'd be over.
Yeah.
Contract be done.
I mean, maybe he DM'd him, tried to get him here. I don't know.
Maybe so.
Maybe he would have liked Mariota to come back. Best leader he's played with.
So if you're – what's also interesting in this discussion to me is, like, if you're John Robinson, do you want to wait this out or do you want to start trying to get a deal done now this offseason? Because if you wait it out, number one, there's risk involved with that. But number two – you know, he could go out this year and just totally blow it up, and all of a sudden that contract gets more expensive. On the flip side, I mean, he could go out there this year and play in 9 games and injuries be a problem again and not be as productive, and maybe he's a little less expensive. I mean, there's so many different ways he could go. It's hard to predict that if you're John Robinson. My guess would be that he'd probably like to get a deal done this offseason at some point. I don't know that. That's just my guess at this point.
Yeah, and of course you can structure it however it helps you too, if you do that.
Sure.
And I think you got to do the work, because I think you got to do the work on it, figure out where the other side is, and see if it could happen. Because yes, it could go. You could regret it, but I mean that's always the case in the NFL. If you believe in him and you believe that he's healthy and is past some of the stuff that's bothered him, then you expect him to have a huge season, and then to your point, that could raise the price a little bit. So I think you got to be doing the work right now and see if something can be agreed upon and just get that finished.
I mean, either way, I think this is a big year for him to stay healthy. I mean, I'd like to see what he can do fully healthy. He played in 13 games last year. He was banged up throughout the year. He didn't have 1,000 yards, 63 catches, 869 yards. You think back to 2020 when Tannehill was really good. I mean, he was really good, 70 catches, over 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns. But he wasn't really healthy that year either. I mean, he was playing through knee problems. He only played in 14 games that year, and there's no telling how many. I think it was almost every game he played, he was an injury of some kind that he was dealing with. So I would love to see what he could do if he was completely healthy for a season.
Right. And again, if you're on the management side, so you're like, you know, you're pointing out that he hasn't been. I mean, that is concerning. His performance has been tremendous through that, but it's still concerning because he's young now, and if it persists, I mean, some guys just can't avoid injuries. No one will avoid injuries in this league, as Mike Vrabel and others will point out. But he's, you know, it has been a lot of different things for him in a very short period of time.
Got a text that says AJ Brown and Forsberg in very similar positions. What do you think of that? Very similar positions for AJ and Forsberg, about to make bank.
Yeah, and kind of the similar question too. Like, how many of the next few years, how many 82 game seasons are you getting out of Philip Forsberg? You know, I mean, yeah. That's the thing. Like, if you could tell me right now, like if I'm John Robinson or I'm David Poyle, you tell me right now, you're going to get full seasons from A.J. Brown. You get full seasons from Philip Forsberg. I feel way better about handing the bag over.
Yeah, no question about it. Speaking of Philip Forsberg, gigantic game coming up tonight for the Predators as they take on the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll get into that coming up next. Make sure you tune in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll have that opportunity at 8:45. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic are with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Here's your chance to qualify for a chance to win a pair of tickets in the Game Changer section coming up as the Preds take on the Philadelphia Flyers this Sunday at Bridgestone Arena, and also a ride on the Zamboni as well during one of the intermissions. Be caller number 5, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will qualify for a pair of tickets coming up this Sunday against the Flyers and a ride on the Zamboni during one of the intermissions as well. We'll announce the winner tomorrow morning during the 9 o'clock hour. Joe, speaking of the Nashville Predators, massive game tonight for the Predators on the road against Vegas. Game 3 of their 3-game road trip. They'll come back home this weekend and take on Philadelphia coming up on Sunday at 5 o'clock. But this is a big one tonight for the Preds against Vegas. They've got a 6-point lead on Vegas right now in the standings. Vegas has played 2 more games than they've played as well. And Vegas is the first team out of the playoffs right now in the Western Conference. So the Predators, a 5-point lead on the Stars, 6-point lead on Vegas. If you can win this game tonight, especially if you can win this game in regulation, you're talking about an 8-point lead on Vegas, and they've played 2 more games than you've played. That's a pretty good spot to be in if you can do that for the Predators tonight. And Vegas has some cap issues that they're trying to work through right now as well. They had a trade that fell through the other day in the NHL, so it's a mess right now with the Golden Knights. You could really put them, at least as far as catching up to you is concerned, you could put Vegas in a world of hurt tonight if you can get this win if you're the Predators.
Yeah, I mean, and you'd feel, you know, pretty good about just the playoffs in general, even if you have to be this, you know, the second wild card, which I still think, you know, the Preds could certainly have a better outcome than that. But, of course, that would mean starting with the Avs. But the point is to get in, and this would be a big one for you to get that regulation win. To me, any even an overtime win, you know, would end up making for a nice trip for the Preds, 4 out of 6.
Yeah, no question. If you get 4 out of 6 on this swing, I think you're feeling pretty good about yourself. John Hines has not been thrilled with the way that they played so far on this road trip, especially 5-on-5. Even though they scored 6 against Anaheim, Philip Forsberg had 5 points in that game. Power play was really good. 5-on-5 really wasn't all that great for the Predators in that game. And then, of course, when you lose 6-1 against LA, I mean, they just got smacked this past game. I mean, they're running into some injury concerns right now on the back end. Dante Fabbro is week to week at this point. They had Ekholm get back in there the other night after coming off an illness. He had to fly across the country that day to get out there and play against LA. Now you've got Jeremy Lozon that's been in there the last couple of games. Mark Borowiecki seems to be able to like find his way back in, and then like he'll get hurt. He had a scary looking play the other night. It looks like he could be okay, but we'll see what his status looks like for the game is tonight as well. So all of a sudden injuries with Matt Benning still being out, Dante Fabbro out as well. They're starting to run into some of those, especially on the back end there defensively.
Yeah, and you know, it's this is one of those things where you know, you look at what's ahead here. You get a chance to get a couple days. You get a chance to come home and have, you know, Philly and Ottawa. I mean, this could be. I mean, you're 7-3 in your last 10 games. So overall, it's been a lot more good than bad recently. It just seems like the bad is bad.
Yeah.
So, but you know, you'd make this 8 out of 11 with a win tonight, and then a chance to keep building on that at home. Interesting to me that the Preds, you know, their home road split is basically the same. I mean, I guess you'd want to be a little bit better at home, but also 18-12-4 is really strong, you know, for a road record. I think that's about what probably the only team better is Colorado, and I guess Calgary. Calgary's a game better than that in the West, but that's yeah. I guess I don't know. Does that mean something moving toward the playoffs? I mean, there is at least some consistency there. You'd want to be a little bit better in your own building, though.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with the style of play. Like, I think when you play the way that they play, that translates to playing pretty well on the road. Like, you know, a lot of it's just like if you can force your style upon other teams, there's not a ton of teams out there that are equipped to play that way. So I think that's a large amount of what their success looks like. I'm interested to see, like, can they play that way tonight against Vegas, and can Roman Josi keep it going? He's at 78 points now, 18 goals, 60 assists. You know, he is carrying this team, and I think he's right there in the Norris Trophy race. I've heard some people throw out that he should be in the Hart Trophy race as well. I don't necessarily disagree with that for league MVP. I don't think that he's going to get it, but I don't necessarily disagree with the assertion that he should at least be talked about, but right now you're 7 points away from the franchise record for points in a season if you're Josi, which as a defenseman we've talked about is just ridiculous. And he's played 62 games this year. The Predators are coming down the home stretch here. My question is, like, can he make it to 100? Like, is Roman Josi going to make it to 100 points? Obviously, the Predators have never even sniffed a 100-point player. They've never really even sniffed a 90-point player. I feel pretty good about Josi making it to 90. Can he make it to 100 points coming down the stretch? Because 100 points as a defenseman, you know, he's still got a long way left to go, and there's a lot of hockey that he's got left to play. You start reaching 100 points as a defenseman, I mean, you're talking about Hall of Fame territory. Those are the players that do that, and it hadn't been done in 30 years at this point.
Yeah, it's absurd. Utterly absurd. So he's got, see if my math's good. So he's got 22 and 18. He needs 22 and 18.
Yep. Which with the pace he's been on lately, he's not that hard.
He's on pace. He's been doing that all year. And yeah, I mean, that's off the top of my head, what was his point total his Norris year?
In the 70 something?
Oh, was it in the 50s?
Yeah. Well, I remember that season got cut short.
Oh,
he got 65.
That's right.
That's right.
It was the short. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
He got to 65. So he had 65 in 69 games.
Yeah. So he was. Yeah. So he wasn't.
But he's already shattered that.
He shattered that. He wasn't too far off a point of a game pace, but of course he's better than that this year. So, man. I mean, that Norris race. I have a feeling that it's actually going to, like, it's actually going to be close. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just, you know, that people want to give Makar the nod. The Avs are great. He's a dazzling player. But I feel like there's more momentum and discussion here lately of Yossi.
Well, the latest kind of like trophy tracker that I saw at NHL.com, and it's been a week or so ago now, so it's not necessarily updated. And I love my people at NHL.com, but I was like, come on, man. They had Cale Makar winning, which is fine. I don't guess I necessarily have a problem with that. I think Yossi was in fourth. I think it was Makar, Hedman, Fox from New York, and then Yossi. And I was like, guys, I'm not trying to take anything away from those other two guys. I mean, Victor Hedman, I still think you can make an argument that maybe Victor Hedman is the best all-around defenseman in the league. Adam Fox is great. But to me, like, if you're voting for anybody other than Cale Makar or Roman Yossi this year, you're not really paying attention. That's just my thoughts on it. I know people will disagree with that, but having Roman Yossi fourth in that poll was freaking absurd.
And that voting was done when?
It was last week.
Wow. Okay. Well, I guess there's not momentum then. Never mind. I didn't see the NHL.com. I mean, do we have specific votes? Can we shame someone? Can we get some?
You know? I think I could probably find it.
Get us the real ballot so we know who to like start tagging on Twitter. And again, it's not like this whole like, hey, the home team rally around the hometown guy. You know, he should.
Yeah.
But Yossi should certainly be in the top two. Voting is done on stats largely more than anything, right? So if that's the case, just go with that.
Yeah, like, look, I don't think if Cale Makar ultimately ends up winning the Norris Trophy ahead of Roman Yossi, like, I'm not going to sit here and act like it's going to be some crime against humanity. Like, Cale Makar has been great.
Yes.
Okay? So you're splitting hairs with these two guys. I mean, as Willie pointed out yesterday, a lot of the numbers do favor Roman Yossi. You know, points, when you want to deep dive into analytics, a lot of those favor Roman Yossi. I mean, the one thing that Yossi does not have going for him is Makar is the best defenseman on the best team right now in the league. And like it or not, that does matter. Like, that is going to be a factor.
Oh, yeah.
in this vote.
No, of course it will be. And that's how it goes a lot of times. And also when you make some of the plays that Makar has made, you know, right. I mean, that sticks in the minds of people, but there's sometimes it gets too simplistic with voters just going by the stats. I mean, if you do a little bit of just first of all, just the straight up traditional stats are right there for you.
Yeah. I mean,
it's close. And then, you know, do a little bit more. I do feel like hockey media embrace analytics maybe more than some sports. You know, I think in some sports you got you got the Cracker Barrel show crowd, and then you got the young and hip you know, Michelle Perry crowd, you know.
That's my alter ego, like Bobby Trees. I'm Michelle Perry on the show.
MC. You're MC Michelle Perry.
Yep.
But in hockey, I feel like the analytics stuff is pretty widely embraced, and, you know, so that
maybe
should help
him. Embrace a little too much.
Well, yeah. But maybe. But, I mean, in this case, in this instance, that would seem to help him.
Yeah. I got a text that says, can the Preds call up Phil Myers after they just waived him, and should they? How does that work when a team waives a player and reassigns him? So he was reassigned to Milwaukee. He was not claimed on waivers. He has since been loaned by the Predators to the Toronto Marlies.
Which is weird.
I think that kind of tells you what they think of Phil Myers at this point. Like, yeah, go ahead. Go play for them. That's fine. He's still technically their property, but, yeah, I don't think they're too high on Philip Myers at this point.
I mean, they just, you know, they just trade a second round pick for someone who better be pretty good.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, he's going to play. He's going to play a lot right now. He's been in the top four last couple games. So we'll see what happens on that side of it. When we come back, it is time for the best and worst thing in sports. We'll take your submissions on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for the best and worst things in the world of sports here on Robbie and Rex Road, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. As always, we'll take your submissions for your best and worst thing in sports on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, would you like to kick us off this week with your best and worst things in the world of sports?
Oh, I'd gladly like to do that because, you know, we don't get too many chances to talk about basketball on this show. So I'm going to talk about basketball on this show with my best and worst. And my best is the St. Peter's Peacocks. So story time. I got story time for both my best and worst today. So story time on the St. Peter's Peacocks. So first of all, they won. As you guys know, because I was on the show, The Complete Zombie, on Friday, and it was like, hey, you go write a column about them? Yes. Okay. So I stayed up real late trying to follow Shaheen Holloway through the hallway and everything. But 2 days later, they are doing it again to Murray State, and it's just like, I cannot believe what I'm seeing. And Kyle Tucker, it's his turn to write about the Peacocks, and I think he's got another big one coming this week on Holloway. But anyway, he's like, hey, go get some color, you know, on the floor and stuff as I go try to talk to Doug Eddard's parents about his mustache, which was some great stuff. I think his dad said the stash is cash. But anyway, so I'm over there. So the St. Peter's Peacocks are all gathered around, and Jamie Erdahl is interviewing them. But then she asks them, there's some dance they do. Maybe you young hip people know this dance. Is it the gritty? It's not the gritty, but it's kind of like, but it's like they do it with one foot kind of thing. It's not exactly the gritty, but it's gritty-ish. Yeah.
I'm really proud that you know what that is.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, I also have teenagers. So that's how old I am. So they all do this dance, and it's pretty funny and everything. But meanwhile, Doug Eddard he's being interviewed by maybe like a local TV station or something. So they break up. The CBS camera turns off. Erdahl's interview's over. He runs over there. He actually shoved me out of the way. Seriously. Like, he actually pushed me out of the way, and he got in the middle of it. What? It's over? And he started to do the little dance by himself like a complete dork, and it was just fantastic. And then what happens? The dude gets a BW3 like endorsement deal this week. I mean, the mustache, it's going out. It's fantastic. Like, the NIL ramifications alone for St. Peter's, which plays in like a junior high gym, fantastic. It's exactly why the NIL is so great. So that's my best.
Love it. I love it.
My worst, another story time. Monday, Knoxville, Tennessee, fantastic game. Tennessee Belmont for the Sweet 16. Lady Vols were up 14, and then all of a sudden they're down 3. It's just, we're in the final minute. So I put out a tweet somewhere and like, hey, if you're not on ESPN, like, get there now. This is great. And I got several tweets about a half hour later, like, well, I turned the channel, and about 8 seconds have passed because there's been like 4 replay reviews in a row. I'm paraphrasing. I mean, the replay reviews, and a couple of them were the most obvious calls. I'm sitting next to like the judger of officials, okay? She's there judging the officials because that's what they do. They've got on-site analysts for the officials. They're determining if they go to the next round. Let me tell you something. She was flustered too, just like everybody else, because it's like, we can all see what happened, and why are you guys spending 8 minutes looking at this? It's incredible. It's utterly ridiculous, and we're never going to go back to no replay. I know people say that. It's not going to happen, and if that happened, it would not be good, because then you'd have some awful call that does need to be changed. Like, we need to have replay, but we need to remember, if there's a clearly bad call that you made that instantly you can figure out needs to be reversed, great, reverse it. If it's close and you're seriously trying to see if like a leg hair touched the ball, then you just go with the call. It's just, it's mind-numbing. It's gotten out of control. And there was a great game that basically didn't get ruined. But, like, for people who are, like, turning over and say, hey, let's watch the end of this game, it's like okay, I got to go do something else now. Like, I got to get my laundry out of the, you know, I got to switch to the dryer. Sorry. Like, I'm going to flip away to something else. It's just one more thing with officiating that needs to get way better.
Big problem. I don't think there's any question about that. Michelle Knezevic, your best and worst things in the world of sports for this week.
And listen, I'm a basketball fan, and I was one of those people in the car like, oh, my gosh, I got to turn this game on, put it on my phone. And then I'm sitting in the Kroger parking lot for about 6 minutes, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, there you go.
I got to go. But I was like, I'll just check Twitter. But my best in sports, it is women's basketball. So this is the first year they have officially gotten the March Madness branding. So we've seen some of that inequality that was being fought against last year. So they officially have the March Madness branding. And the viewership for women's basketball has gone up 15% for the first round. And for the second round, it's gone up 25%. So the argument on whether women's games should be showed on primetime slots versus there's no audience for it. Well, there is an audience. Viewership has gone up. And the UConn-UCF women's basketball game had 1.13 million views, which is the most since 2009. So I just think that's amazing for women's basketball. Amazing that they have finally gotten the March Madness branding. It helps tremendously. On the flip side, I'm also going to go another basketball thing because we're a college basketball show here, right, Robbie?
We definitely are not.
You better have two basketball items, Robbie.
Oh, listen.
Clean sweep. I do have one, actually.
Oh, nice.
My worst in sports is SEC men's basketball.
Tough one.
There were six teams in the tournament. What an amazing, you know, regular season. A bunch of these teams were ranked in the top five nationally. And we just, I mean, four teams were out in the first round. Oh, no, three. And then three made it to the second round. And now all we have is Arkansas. Just very disappointing. I mean, we talked about Kentucky being able to win the national championship, Tennessee being able to win the national championship, Auburn being able to win the national championship, and we can't even see any of those teams make it to the second weekend in March. SEC basketball, come on. We were talking about how competitive you all were this year, and now we get to watch Arkansas and Eric Musselman. Come on, let's go. Let's hope you make it to next weekend.
Well, by the way, they're the first game today. So as of like early this evening, Arkansas-Gonzaga, I mean, you could be very early in Thursday of the Sweet 16 weekend and be totally out of SEC teams. Probably will be. That's pretty
sad. They're probably going to get put out. Yeah,
exactly.
That's so, cheeks.
We'll see what happens on that front. My best thing in sports, infighting amongst by Miami Heat. Eric Spoelstra almost coming to blows with Jimmy Butler last night and Udonis Haslem as well. I'm now convinced Joe Rexrode one of two things is going to happen. Either they're going to completely fall apart at the seams or they're going to go win the whole thing. Eric Spoelstra almost destroying and punching Jimmy Butler in a team huddle last night. The clipboard toss that Spoelstra had was awesome. I mean, just the form, the follow-through on the clipboard toss and the team huddle was great. It's been a while since I've seen a team huddle explode like that where the head coach and a couple of the players are about to literally fight each other on the sideline. It was awesome. And some of the moments caught on camera of, like, video from the crowd and what Spoelstra was actually saying in there, I can't repeat any of it, but it was pretty amazing.
I'm Googling.
Yeah, please send this to us, Robbie. The best is when Eric is just in between the two, and he's just this little guy and these two huge NBA players on both sides of him.
I mean, I don't know what Jimmy Butler said, but Spoelstra's response was basically like, what? You want me to effing fight you is basically what his response was at that point. So it was pretty awesome. Pretty great stuff last night in the NBA. My worst thing in sports, Brian Gutekunst, GM of the Green Bay Packers. You know, he's basically walked away from this scot-free, which is kind of amazing. But somehow in the last 24 months, he has managed to alienate Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams to the point where you almost lost Aaron Rodgers and you did lose Davante Adams. Let's put that in Titans terms for a second. Let's say John Robinson had made Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown mad and he lost one of them. What will we be talking about here on our show? We'd be spending a lot of time talking about John Robinson. And I feel like people just look around like, oh, yeah, Brian Gutekunst, whatever. Just guess he still got Aaron Rodgers. It's amazing that your job as a general manager with your two best players. You somehow managed to make both of them mad. You lost one of them. You almost lost the second one of them. And he just walks away scot-free like nothing happened.
I feel like you kind of liked Gutekunst for like maybe about like a week.
5 days.
5 days? It was total 5 days? Yeah.
5 days. It's amazing. Just think about that. Like if John Robinson did something like that here, what we'd be talking about.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's obviously like there's just a totally different dynamic with when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers. And I'm sure it's not easy, but you got to understand, like, how do you win in this league? You know, you don't win in this league by alienating your best players.
Yeah, no question about it. Let's go to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Dennis, echoing Joe Rexroth, says the worst thing, reviews at the end of the NCAA men's and women's games, it absolutely kills the excitement. This is coming from Dennis on the text line. I think you've struck a nerve here on the text line, Rexroth. Lots of votes for the reviews in men's and women's basketball.
Well, Ubbin wrote a whole column on it, which was really funny and good as well. I mean, it's weird how sometimes these things seem to come in bunches. Because that's the one that but then we've had this with so many of the games of the men's tournament too.
There's got to be, they need to put a clock on it. They just need to put a clock on it.
I mean, I know that they'll resist that, but like, I don't understand how these people, there were a couple the other night where it's absolutely obvious what the call is. And then are you guys tired? You just need a break?
Yeah. Sip of water.
Are you guys like watching like Office clips over there for a little bit just to kind of break up the, have a little fun? It makes no sense.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Stephen Holder from The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on Matt Ryan as the quarterback of the Colts. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexroth here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better, and that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.